Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinels, J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
Hello, everybody. If you're listening to this on the Point Forward podcast feed, we're not going to talk about the Milwaukee Bucks today. I'm sure we will again soon. The Bucks are awesome, but they're not the only Milwaukee basketball story that's making some headlines here in the Cream City. The Marquette Golden Eagles are rocking it, and they are outright Big East Conference champions. So we're going to do something a little bit special, a little bit different today, and talk Marquette basketball with the one and only Ben Steele. He is the Marquette beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Ben, it is a pleasure to talk to you. How are you, young man?
JR, we made it, fam. It's March.
We made it to March.
The birds are singing. It's 70 degrees out. No, wait. It's Milwaukee. It's 40 and gray out. But
yeah,
it's March
bad.
Nonetheless. We made it. Do you think, off the top, March Madness, NCAA tournament, the greatest sporting event of the world? Rivaled only by the FIFA World Cup? Where do you stand on all that?
That is a very good question. I would say the Super Bowl is the obvious answer if you are an American fan. Dulled a little bit, though, by the fact that if you are physically at the event, the Super Bowl, it's maybe not as emotional. It's more of a showcase for a lot of things than it is a great sporting event. So yeah, I do love the tournament. The problem I would say with the tournament is that you really get the best of it early,
right?
And then later, a lot of people, half the people tune out for the second round. Then it's really more about your specific fan base. So That's maybe the one thing you could hold against it. I don't know. But I love it. You love it. And Marquette fans love it this year because, hello, they're Big East Conference champs. You know, Ben, I don't know if you know this. This is a fact that very few people know. They were picked to finish ninth in the Big East this year.
Right. This is the first time hearing about this.
I know, it's
crazy.
When
did this happen?
This is something that comes up in every sentence.
Yes, I banned myself from asking about that.
Shaka, how do you feel about being picked ninth? Okay, but we have to start there.
Yeah.
That's the obvious place to start. They were picked to finish ninth in the Big East. They just won it outright. This is not a mid-major conference. Certainly, there will be people who love the Big Ten that might, quibble with that. But, this is a top five conference, at minimum, a top five, maybe top four conference in the nation right now. So they went from a team that nobody really had a lot of belief in to being a team that wins this thing outright. Let's go back a few months to the media day when it was revealed that there was a preseason poll having Marquette slated ninth. I mean, did that make sense to you? Did that feel, I'm sure it felt a little bit off, a little underappreciating, but I don't know. I mean, they had a lot of guys back. I guess I'd be curious what your initial thoughts were when you heard that news.
Yeah, I thought it was definitely low. When people were asking me my opinion of where they would finish, I just said fifth or sixth. That was kind of like a default answer, just because the same reason why the coaches picked Marquette to finish ninth. They just had to replace their two leading scorers from last season and Justin Lewis and Daryl Morsell. Throughout last summer, you'd ask Shaka Smart about that, and he'd say, "Well, we're going to do it by committee." Also Iguodala is going to score a little more. Tyler Kolek's going to score a little more. Stevie Mitchell's going to score a little more. Cam Jones is going to score a little more. And at the time, I kind of thought that was kind of coach speaky, But that, to his credit, that was proven accurate. And definitely didn't see the outright Big East champions in the future way back in October, but I would have said back then that they would be vying for an NCAA tournament bid, probably finishing fourth or fifth in the East. So it's a surprise, but ninth was probably a little too low.
Yeah, to sort of accentuate your point, Lewis and Morsell, they roughly averaged 30 points, a little more than 30 points a game last year. Cam Jones then is next at 7.4.
Yeah.
So that's the top level player that you're bringing back in theory. Tyler Kolek at 6.7. Olivier Maxence Prosper 6.6. So we're talking about guys who had to step up. Do you get the sense? I mean, it's only year two of Shaka Smart. Mm-hmm. Is he the guy who can develop somebody this rapidly? I mean, I am fascinated how quickly they were able to build what seems like a pretty good team concept. I mean, I think you could safely point to Cam Jones and Tyler Kolek if you're asking who the best players on this team are, but it's not just them. I mean, Ozo Iguodala,
Ozo,
for example,
might have an argument.
Exactly.
You.
And I mean, he might go pro. He's the biggest pro prospect, I'd say, on this team. So maybe that's a question I should just ask. What makes this engine run? In March Madness, it always comes down to stars making plays. Who's going to do that for Marquette? Who are the guys that really, that really make this engine turn over the way it has this year?
Well, it starts with Tyler Kolek and Oso Igodaro. I mean, they're two of the best passers in the nation, and that's what makes this Marquette team so hard to guard. Oso Igodaro being your center and being a great ball handler and being a passer and be able to facilitate out of pick and rolls, that's not something that teams see a lot defensively, and it causes confusion for defensive teams. Tyler Kolek, you know, is probably going to be in a few days going to be named Big East Player of the Year mm-hmm. on Wednesday. Certainly unique in that, you know, he averages 12 points a game. Maybe by the time the regular season ends tomorrow, he might be third on the team in scoring.
Yeah.
And could be your Big East Player of the Year, which is certainly unique. But if you watch this team play, you see how important Tyler Kolek is to Marquette. All the ball movement, all the player movement, it all starts with him. And he's also they take their leadership cues from him. He's a fiery personality, as evidenced by, you know, the quote heard around the world at Big East Media Day. But
I believe we can say F them. I believe we can go that far.
Yes.
Also, as oft repeated as ninth in the Big East in the preseason.
Yes.
It's about the same.
And he's cashing in on that a little bit. You can get your FM sweatshirts at TylerKolek.com if you want to get your Christmas shopping done in March this year. But really, one of the unique things about this team is that it's not reliant on one or two players. Like, six people have led the team in scoring this season and during games. So not relying on one or two players that could help you in March when you know, one guy gets cold or one guy gets in foul trouble.
Yeah, guys like David Joplin is a good example, a guy who averages less than double digits off the bench but has had some monster moments and can hit threes with the best of them. Yeah, you're right. It's an interestingly deep team. When Shaka Smart arrived, I mean, he's kind of a dream hire for Marquette. Mm. He's you know, a Wisconsinite, but a guy who seemed to bring just a ton of passion and also, I would say, a ton of cliches. Like, his introductory press conference was motivating, but I don't know if he said anything that really set him apart. It's all been in how he's able to take this team. A lot of guys that came in from other places last year, and we'll actually talk about the transfer portal a little bit, but they didn't maybe add new people this year, but last year he did, and made that a cohesive unit in a year's time. How is Shaka special? I mean, he's a National Coach of the Year candidate. Do you think is it X's and O's? Is it just that emotional piece? I mean, he didn't have a ton of success at Texas, by their standards. Mm-hmm. He was a tournament guy, but you know, has struggled to get out of the first round of the tournament. And Texas probably would have moved on if things had stayed on the same trajectory mm-hmm. for the next couple of years. Yeah. So what is the X factor here that Shaka Smart provides that has allowed this thing to flourish?
I think it's a number of things. I think when Marquette decided to move on from Steve Wojciechowski a couple years ago, they were definitely looking for a guy with head coaching experience. Wojo came in, you know, he'd been at Duke for a long time, but it's a whole different job moving that one seat over to the head coaching position. And especially if you're a first-time head coach in a league like the Big East, the big, high, you know, one of the top four conferences in the country, learning on the job is difficult because they're going against really good coaches every game.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Shaka Smart's been a head coach since he was 31 years old, you know, and this is his 14th season as a head coach. He's been through it. He's been through the ups and downs, and he's very super organized in how he wants to develop relationships with people. I remember when he first came in and he was telling me, like, how he goes about his week, and he has everything, like, meticulously planned for, like, he meets with freshmen on this, you know, this so many times a week during, you know, when they first get here, just to make sure, you know, the communication is open. He meets with, like, sophomores on this day, and he's just super organized in how he develops relationships and the communication. And I think, you know, that you mentioned the time he had at Texas. I think it kind of spurred like that underdog mentality that he had when he was at VCU. And you know, if you remember, he was like the hottest name in coaching after he made the Final Four, and they had a scrappy team, and he was, you know, this enthusiastic guy that took charges during practice as a coach and all that. You know, at Texas, I think he lost a little bit to that edge where, you know, he's at this major athletic department that has the highest budget in the you know, one of the highest budgets in the country. And, you know, he's getting one and done NBA players. And he
sure
got back
was.
To Marquette. And, you know, this is a different kind of program where he's developing guys over multiple years. And he's really developed these really deep relationships with these guys. That's what he talks about all the time is that, you know, I'm going to start talking like Shockey here, but like player development is personal development. That's what he says all the time. And you see it, and these players have really bought in the last couple of years. And I think it really plays out in how they play on the court, the way they share the ball, the way they move the ball. They really play for each other, and it's actually pretty amazing to watch.
Tyler Kolek is, like we just said, is a guy who's probably going to be Big East Player of the Year. He's a guy who came in as a transfer last year. Famously this year, Shaka hasn't used the transfer portal. And that's been kind of a story, a national story the last few weeks. And it isn't so much that he's saying he doesn't like the idea of the transfer portal or anything, just that he knew that it had reached a point where guys coming in were expecting to get big NIL deals, and he felt like that would be a huge risk to add that piece. If that money wasn't going to go, you know, like you would have to commit a lot. And he believed in the guys he had, and he didn't want to overwrite them for something that would be this big of a risk. So that's interesting to me. They did bring in a lot of different guys, but can you speak to that a little bit? Like, am I characterizing that correctly? Or maybe he is a guy who is going to, you know, sort of fight that, like, I feel like it might be a losing battle, but fight the fight of you know, the transfer portal is a last resort and not how we're going to build our program.
Yeah, he's just going to be very selective about how he uses the transfer portal. I think when you think back to before the season started, everyone kind of looked at the roster and said, you know, this team needs like a more front court depth, a big guy that can help on the boards. That's obviously been their biggest weakness this season. So they kicked the tires on a few guys in the transfer portal, big guys. But, you know, Osei Igudala had worked really hard in the offseason, and Shaka talked about that last summer. You know, we're going to put the ball in Oso's hands. He's going to make more plays than any 6'11" guy in the country. He said that over and over again. So I don't think he wanted to disrupt that he, you know, Oso had worked hard. He deserved like the starting center spot, and you know, it paid off. Like, Osei Igudala is probably one of the most improved guys in the country. This team would look a lot different if there was another 6'11" guy that you had to battle for playing time with on this team. So that's what Shaka said it over and over again. Like, we're always gonna prioritize our own guys over bringing in other guys and reward other guys and not the guys that have worn the Marquette uniform before.
Yeah. I know you are a fan, as I am, of the CBS Ion College Basketball podcast with Matt Norlander and Gary Parrish. Mm. So in honor of them, to rip off their bit, I have a little bit of trivia time
for you.
I wanted to know, because Kolek is on the cusp of being the third leading scorer on this team, if not the second leading, when the last time a Big East Player of the Year was given the honor. It's going to be easier than you think. Well, I don't know about that, but it's not going exactly where you think it's going. When the last time that had happened, and unfortunately, I can only go back 2 years. Colin Gillespie of Villanova was a second leading scorer, but that's unfair because it was a three-way player of the year.
Right.
The first leading scorer on Villanova was one of the other guys, Jeremiah Robinson Earl, and then our guy, Sandro Mamukelashvili. Yeah. No, I know how to say that. Mamukelashvili, of course, recently weighed by the Milwaukee Bucks. There's our tie for the Bucks podcast crowd. So that one doesn't really count. But Chris Dunn in 2016 for Providence, he was their second leading scorer. But there, back in 2009, it was again Big East, by the way, loves to give away co-player of the year. It is a tradition. There were two guys, DeJuan Blair of Pittsburgh and Hashim Thabeet of UConn, neither of whom was the leading scorer on their team. Hashim Thabeet was the third leading scorer on his team, only by a fraction, similar to where Kolek is now. Like, maybe, you know, could be second, could be third. But can you name for me either of the leading scorers on the 2009 Pittsburgh team, the guy who was the leading scorer when DeJuan Blair of Pittsburgh was co-player of the year, or either of the Connecticut guys who finished ahead of big man Hashim Thabeet in 2009?
Wow. Oh, man, you're really testing my memory here.
Yeah.
2009 Pittsburgh. That wasn't Carl Croucher, right?
Nope. That's a good Pittsburgh name.
Yeah. It's definitely not.
I'm not going to let you twist out here in the wind too long.
Yeah. Hmm. Pittsburgh 2009.
Or UConn 2009. These are not household names. They're names that you'd remember from college. Not so much what they did in the pros.
Yeah. 2009 UConn. Was that Jeremy Lamb?
Alas, it is not.
All right.
All right, we're going to wrap this up. So the Pittsburgh guy, Sam Young, is the name of the Pittsburgh player. Yeah. The two UConn guys, A.J. Price and Jeff Adrian, are both finished ahead.
We would have been here for a long time.
I imagine so. So not as uncommon as I thought. A second or third leading score, even. Third leading score, I wasn't able to find an example. I didn't go back, you know, deep into the 90s or anything. I was mostly keeping it this century, but did not find another example of an outright Big East player of the year who was the third leading scorer on his team. What do you think the odds here that Shaka wins National Coach of the Year? It does seem like Kolick will win Big East Player of the Year. Shaka will win Coach of the Year. I think that's kind of set in stone at this point.
Yes, for sure.
What about National Coach of the Year? Could Marquette really have a candidate? I mean, they've got a candidate. Could they really have a National Coach of the Year winner here in 2023?
He's definitely in the conversation. And, you know, I think we were talking about this before, but, you know, Bill Self's probably got to be up there. But, I mean, he might just be a guy that people take for granted a little bit.
I agree.
His success, just take it for just accepted as just by default, he's going to be good every year. Other guys, you know, Matt Painter is probably up there. Mm. Jerome Tang at Kansas State was a hot name for a while. They've kind of cooled off. So Shaka's probably maybe overtaken him a little bit.
Yeah. But Marquette's probably going to finish ahead of K-State in the seeding at this point. So.
And Shaka's got that ninth place narrative that we mentioned earlier that Bill Self and Matt Painter don't have, although, you know, nobody thought that Purdue was going to be this good either.
What Bill Self has is they won a national title and all those guys are gone.
Yeah. It's,
and they just won the Big 12 again. Yeah,
I mean, he's clearly the best coach in college basketball. Yeah. I mean, he was one of the best ever. So that's not a surprise. But, this could be one of his masterpieces for sure.
Yeah, I do think it'll be Bill Self. I think Shaka's going to be way up there that night. It's not even just the because you could easily say, well, the median people are stupid for picking them ninth. Like that's the biggest part of the puzzle, you could say. Not you, of course. Other media people. The generic media. You know how it is.
Them.
But you could say he took a team with a lot of guys that are back. Like, they didn't add anybody. Yeah. You know, that's the thing.
And they play super different than they did last season and super different than you'd expect a Shaka Smart team to play like. You know, you'd think of Shaka and the Havoc defense at VCU and Garden Guys 94 feet, but this is very much like an elite offensive team that's been, you know, top five in KenPom for the last couple months in offense. That was another thing that nobody saw coming, but it's a credit to that coaching staff, getting these guys and seeing the pieces that they have and fitting them together perfectly.
Let's talk about the NCAA tournament. A best case scenario for Marquette and maybe a bad case. You talked about the rebounding being a possible issue, and I imagine you get a bunch of towers. They could struggle with that depending on how, if Marquette can spread it out, make it a track meet, then they could kind of impose their will. But with just kind of where we see Marquette heading, as a possible two seed, more likely a three, maybe a four if things go sideways here, but I
think they've done enough to probably get a three seed. That's where I would put my money. If they win the Big East tournament and maybe one of those teams above them in the rankings or the net loses a shocking game in their conference tournament, they could probably overtake for a two seed, but I'd say most likely three.
And then what type of team are we talking about being a problem? You know, and you'd want to know the whole bracket, like what would it take for them to get to the Final Four, but also what are some of the things you'd have to worry about as like a first weekend upset?
Yeah, I mean, if they ran into like North Carolina again, you know, the team that dominated them by 30 points last year
in the
first round, is struggling this year, but it's mostly the same players. So you got a big rebounder like Armando Bacot. I think he had like 20 rebounds against Marquette last season in the first round. I don't remember off the top of my head the exact number, but that kind of player, and he got a good defensive guy that can guard Kolick like a Leaky Black. Kentucky is the same way. That, you know, team that's struggling this year, but they match up really well with a good rebounder like the Oscar Tshiebwe and a guy that can guard Kolick and Kaysen Wallace. So those type of teams, those are times that guys that could scare you, guys who have matchups for Oso Iguodala and Tyler Kolick, that those engines of the Marquette offense.
I, of course, someone who loves content, would love to see Wisconsin find a way into the first four and wind up facing the three seed in the second round, upsetting their way to face Marquette. I'm not feeling it right now, but Why did Marquette lose to Wisconsin earlier this season? Can you explain that one to me? That one's weird.
Yeah, I mean, Trecky Hepburn had like an out-of-body shooting experience, which he's capable of, but that's probably his best shooting game of his career. Marquette still, that was early in the season. Marquette still hadn't quite hit its stride yet. Marquette's gotten a lot better. We've talked about their offense a lot today, but defensively, in the last month or so, they've definitely ratcheted up on that end. Way back then in December when they played Wisconsin, they were still kind of figuring things out on the defensive end. A lot of guys struggled in that game. Cam Jones kind of carried Marquette's offense with the hot shooting night. Yeah, it was just one of those early games, but Wisconsin surely caught lightning in a bottle in that one.
Going forward, even beyond the NCAA tournament, all these guys are due back, you know, like they could be here for another year, another two years in most cases. So I don't know. I mean, right now they're as high in the AP rankings as they've been since the 1970s, since Al McGuire. Yeah. They're number six in the country. They're not going to be worse off than that because now the guys that are coming back are all, you know, major contributors to a top three seed. So but at the same time, I know that they have probably more bodies than scholarships at this point. Right. So, like, I don't know if any major changes are afoot at all, but what do you envision, you know, what do you envision the next, you know, 365 days look like for Marquette?
Yeah, they're definitely not getting picked to finish ninth next season in the Big East poll. Yeah, they're probably going to be top 10 for sure in a preseason poll, maybe even top five. We'll see how this season ends and see how the roster shakes out. But, yeah, they're one over the NCAA scholarship. If everyone comes back next season, one over the limit of 13, bringing in three freshman guys who have already signed. So definitely one person for sure is going to move on, whether that's a transfer portal, whether it's somebody like Olivia Maxence Prosper or Osue Godaro that could test the NBA draft waters. Those are probably the two guys that are closest to that. There's also like really a lot of really good guards on this team and some more coming in next season. So there's a glut of guards, so somebody might just say, hey, look, I had a good time here, but I'm not seeing the playing time for myself. I'd rather go someplace else and play 20 minutes a night instead of playing 10 that I probably would play next season. It'll all shake out. I think they might have some idea of I don't think Shaka's the type of guy who would do this without planning. I can't break any news on the podcast. I'm not quite sure myself, but there's got to be definitely a plan there somewhere.
Yeah. What about guys that are on this team now that I realize that the vast majority of people probably aren't acquainted with Chase Ross or Sean Jones, and those guys are contributing, even if they're not the same level as some of those top guys. But who else on this team do you think is capable of doing what a lot of these guys have done, and that's take a huge step forward or, you know, really emerge as maybe one of the bell cows in the next year or so?
Yeah, Chase Ross is a good example. He's like a super example of a Shaka Smart player. Shaka Smart calls him a dude. That's like Shaka's highest compliment is to call somebody a dude.
Does he call you a dude?
No, definitely. I don't fit the criteria for that. I'm not 6'4 and can guard you 94 feet like a Chase Rosh can. Yeah, I'm a little scrappy. Like I got five fouls I can give you. But he's definitely a guy that profiles as a super lockdown defender, and he's super athletic and he's exciting in the open court. So he's a guy that's going to be a fan favorite with his dunk shots the next couple of years.
The dunks are
people
beautiful.
People love those. another guy, you know, Ben Gold has played really well the last couple of weeks. He's a 6'11 New Zealand guy. He's a freshman. Different from Oso Igodaro as a big man who could shoot. Oso, you know, scores most of his points in the 4 feet around the basket. But Ben Gold's like a super skilled big man that could spread the court out for Marquette, gives him that shooting at a five position, and he's battled on the boards. He's given them something the last couple of weeks that he's shown a lot of heart in that regard. So he's another guy that I think is poised to take another leap or two in the next couple of years.
I love of course the line Marquette has literally Ben Gold. They have somebody on the team who is practically.
Did we trademark that yet?
We should. I mean, if Tyler Kola can get t-shirts, then so can we. We definitely have to work something like that out. I enjoyed your article at jsonline.com about Zach Reitzel, a guy who's brought in from an NAIA school and unfortunately isn't able to play much this year with injuries, but seems like a great personality, a great guy that's been around. And I don't know if one would imagine that he'll be here going forward, but still, it's a really good story. So if you haven't checked that out, You should check out everything Ben Steele has, from the milkshakes to the player profiles. It's great stuff at jsonline.com. I think that's all I got for you, Ben. I don't know if there's anything else we need to know about this team. Selection Sunday is coming up on March 12th. They're going to find their destination. Yeah. Where are they going this year? Columbus? Is that Des Moines? What's happening?
I think Columbus is probably the most likely destination. Des Moines, maybe a second choice. I would bet Columbus.
What do we have to do to get Marquette against VCU?
I don't think
that's going to happen, but the A-10 is going to be a one-bid league, so whoever wins that tournament and VCU is the top seed, they're probably not going to be like a 14, though. They're probably not going to play a three seed.
Yeah, but that story writes itself.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Or Marquette, Texas. That wouldn't happen in the first round, but we could get down to like that could be a regional final, like Texas, Marquette for... That would be something special. Texas hasn't won a first round game in a while because our guy Shaka has not won a first round game in a while.
That's since he was at VCU.
Yep. So that will be a narrative that I'm sure he's ready to put to bed as well here when the tournament gets going. Ben, I think we'll do this again. We'll be able to chat about their first round playoff matchup their first round tournament matchup potentially. We'll see if we can do that. I know there'll be a lot of travel involved and look ahead a little bit to this NCAA tournament because I know right now people are really high on what's going on at Marquette. Thanks for joining me, man. I really appreciate it.
Awesome, man. Let's do it again soon.
Sounds good. Talk to you then.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JSOnline.com production.